It's a pleasure to be with everyone tonight. I want to dedicate the learning tonight should be from my mother's complete recovery, or Refuah Shlema. Her name is Miriam Bas Bluma Nechama. So the schus of our learning tonight should be a refuah for her. So thank you, everyone, for your kind thoughts and direction of your tefillos. So tonight's class, I'm not going to use any source sheet because I find that at 8:15 at night, it's very distracting, and it'll put everybody to sleep if I don't succeed just with the class itself. So tonight's class is dedicated to my all-time greatest and most favorite Torah personality, Talmudic personality, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva. And before I begin talking about Rabbi Akiva, and the title of our class tonight is called Tragedy and Triumph, I want to just ask a question. We were all born in a world where Sfira Saomer, this 49-day period, by the way, we counted 15 last night, for those of you who haven't counted yet. I see thumbs up already from Jeff. Great. So last night was 15 of the Sfira. We associate Sfira Saomer so much with the mourning practices, the Minhage Avelut, that it's hard for us to even conceptualize and to visualize in our mind's eye the idea that when this period of time originated, it was a celebratory time. It was a simcha. I mean, think about it. We got out of Egypt at Pesach, 49 days, we journeyed to Sinai, to Har Sinai, we get the Torah. Okay, I understand that 40 days after that it didn't turn out well, golden calf, but at least up to that moment, it was a singularly joyous occasion. So how outrageous is it then that in this 49-day block of time that connects Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Exodus, to Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah at Sinai, that we should somehow breach the Simcha and say, no live music, no weddings, etc. Why should we have Minhage Avelut, these customs of mourning, during this Simcha time? So before we answer that question, let's look at this parsha from this past week. The Kabbalah in the Zohar tells us that anyone, even today, who reads the story of the tragic deaths of Nadav and Avihu, the two shining sons of Aharon HaKohen, who died on the inauguration day of the Mishkan of God's home, the tabernacle, that anyone who sheds a tear and connects with Aharon, with Aaron and his loss, that their sins are forgiven, and that they will never lose their children in their lifetime. It's a promise. So again, why should it be that two people that we lost, Ad Hayom Hazeh, that until this day itself, we are somehow still mourning for them, and if we mourn properly, everything's good. And the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva, and again, I understand 24,000 versus 2, it seems much more dramatic, but why would the 24,000 deaths still be felt thousands of years later, a couple thousand years later, and we're still mourning for them? It seems strange. Now, the rabbis do point to other issues, and I think it's fascinating, that yes, the 24,000, the Talmidei de Rabbi Akiva died during this period of time, really the 33-day block between Passover and Lag BaOmer, and that more specifically, it was sort of a harbinger, if you will, of things to come. And that during the Dark Ages, literally the Dark Ages, the Middle Ages, there were countless pogroms and crusades. Many, many thousands of our people lost their lives. And therefore, the fact that the 24,000 Talmidei de Rabbi Akiva died also was just the beginning, almost like a foreshadowing of the fact that this 33-day period is ultimately destined to become not a period of Simcha, which was originally intended, but rather Avelut. It's a mourning period. Okay. So let's now try to understand the impact of the loss of those 24,000, what it has meant to our world. So let me just share with you a little insight into Nadav and Avihu. So can you imagine a world where Nadav and Avihu could have taken over the reins, so to speak, of leadership of the Jewish people from Moshe and from Aharon, from Moses and Aaron, and led the Jewish people, perhaps directly, into the promised land, into Eretz Yisrael. It would have been a transformative journey. Things would have turned out different for our history. And unquestionably, what if you had the 24,000 students of the greatest, the Moshe Rabbeinu, the Moses of the Talmud, Rabbi Akiva, and I'm not exaggerating when I say that. There's a famous Talmudic section in Menachot which literally compares Moses as the Torah, the Torsha Bichsav, the written Torah, and Rabbi Akiva as the master, the Moshe, if you will, the Mashal, as the master of the Torsha Balpeh. And it's not an exaggeration. So if the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva don't die, can you imagine how many more students each of them could have developed? And how our world would have changed. So then we can begin to understand that the seeds, the foundation of this mourning period is very profound. From the loss of Nadav and Avihu to the loss of the 24,000, and that impact is felt to this day. In the same way that one can only imagine without a Shoah, without a Holocaust. You know, each shtetl in Europe had a rabbi, and most of those rabbis were of such grandeur that they would have perhaps on their own qualified as the Gadol Hador, as one of the greatest rabbis of our generation. And thousands of these rabbis in Europe, the Churban, the destruction of Europe, were lost. It's incalculable how our world just 70 years later would look different, our Jewish world, had each of these rabbis of the 6 million and the leaders and the pious ones, had they survived. Our whole world would be different. So again, we can sort of understand a little bit of the necessity that this time, the Sfira, yes, it began as Simcha time, but tragically, there was always this duality. The Simcha was superficial. Underlying the Simcha was somehow this Avilut, this mourning period. So now let's talk about Rabbi Akiva. There isn't a whole lot in the Talmud that gives us information about what went wrong, why they died. So I'm going to share with you now the source in the Gemara. It's from Tractate Yevamos, and it doesn't give us a lot of information. We're going to try to really examine it tonight. And just for the sake of expedience and boredom at 8:30 at night, I'm not going to tax you by having a screen with the words. I'm just going to read it to you, okay? So this is from Yevamos, Maseches Yevamos, and it's 62b. If you want to look it up, okay, it is Samach Beis Amid Beis. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says, and it's kind of ironic that he's the one who loses and he's the one who is the spokesman, the Manda Amar. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Limei Torah b'yalduso, if a person learnt Torah in their youth, or as they say in Viniland, in their ute, if a person learnt Torah in their youth, Yilmod Torah b'zuknaso, this person should continue to learn Torah even in their old age. Hayilo talmidim b'yalduso, if a person developed many students in their youth, yulo talmidim b'ziknuso, person should continue and develop students even in their old age. How do we know? So it's a pasuk from Koheles, from Ecclesiastes. Shene emar, it says in Ecclesiastes, in Koheles, baboker zeroe zarecho, in the morning a person should sow and plant their seeds, Uva erev altenach yadecho, but in the evening, in the twilight of their life, don't rest on your laurels. Keep developing, learning, and students. Now that is the introduction to the following. So listen to how prophetic it was that Rabbi Akiva was the one who said those words, paraphrasing Koheles, that a person in their youth should develop students, and in their old age. So listen to now how the Gemara develops this. Amru, so they said, Shnemasar Elef Zugim, there were 12,000 pairs, Talmidim, of students, Hayulola Rabbi Akiva, that Rabbi Akiva had. So in other words, we're not referring to the 24,000 as 24,000 per se, we're calling them 12,000 pairs. Let's keep that in mind. Why should it be 12,000 pairs? Why not just say 24,000 students? Maybe that's germane. Please pile that away. Migvas ad Antiparas. And they extended from far and wide, from Gevat to Antiparas, parts of Israel. V'chulan, and all these 24,000, the 12,000 bears, mesu, they died, b'perek echod, in one chapter, in one tragic, dark time period. Mipnei shelo nagu kavod zeh lazeh, because they did not show honor, respect, one to the other. So they all died during this period of time. V'haya ha'olam shamem, and the world was desolate. It was wiped out. It was tohu vavohu. There was nothing learning-wise going on in the world with the deaths of these shining 24,000 students of the great Rabbi Akiva. Ad, until Sheba Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva came, he went, Eitzel Rabbosenu Shebadarom, to the rabbis who still were living in the southern part of Israel, v'shana lahem, and he taught them Torah in his old age, in the twilight of his life. And who were the five? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua. V'heim heim ha'amidu Torah, oisa sha'ah. And these great shining students of Rabbi Akiva reestablished and brought back Torah and upheld the learning of Torah at that time. Tana, an unnamed Mishnaic sage, said, Kulam Mesu, all of the 24,000 perished, Mipesach v'ad Atzeres, from Passover until Atzeres, which is the term for Shavuos. Literally the end of the process. So again, they died during this, what was supposed to be this simcha, this joyous time. So there's not a lot of information there. The only thing we know, 12,000 pairs, they did not show somehow kavod, honor and respect one to the other. They were lacking, and they died. And the Gemara then goes on to tell us what they died of, this horrific plague called diphtheria, Askara, which is this plague that takes away the vocal abilities of a person. So it's a nightmarish plague called Askara. So I have heard, interestingly, that what the rabbis were doing is they were cloaking, they were hiding what the plague actually was. The plague were the Romans. Remember, Rabbi Akiva was the greatest proponent of Bar Kokhba. Bar Kosiva, Bar Kokhba, could have been Mashiach, could have been the Messiah, had the generation perhaps merited it. Rabbi Akiva was of the belief that Bar Kokhba was the Mashiach. And you can only imagine that in the failed Bar Kokhba rebellion, when thousands and thousands were massacred as a reprisal from the Romans, that the students of Rabbi Akiva, the greatest proponent of Bar Kokhba, would have been targeted by the Romans. So I'm just, again, it's not everyone who says this, including the Gemara didn't want to come out and say this, because if you think about it, they're still under Roman occupation, and the Romans don't want to read about all the horrible things that they did. I mean, true, of course they were true, but they don't want to read about it, so they kind of cloaked in the shadows, and they called it Askara, this diphtheria-type disease, and maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but it could be also, without question, the persecution. Some of the greater Gaonim later on, many years ago, specifically targeted this Gemara and said, no, it's the Romans, and it's just simply using a euphemism for the Roman Empire. Okay, be that as it may, what happened? How could it be that 24,000 students, who were the shining stars of the world, the next generation, the next millennia of superstar Torah learners, how could they have been so petty and so lacking in basic midos, in basic ability to connect one to the other, that they couldn't even show kavod, respect one to the other? Shalonago kavod zeh lazeh? I mean, it's almost inconceivable that this could be true. So what does that mean? So remember I asked you to file away for further debate and knowledge. The idea of 12,000 pairs versus 24,000 people. So again, this is an approach from my teacher, Rabbi Weinberg, and let me share it with you, his mahalik, his approach. He says the following, that by focusing the Gemara, as it does, on the fact that it wasn't just 24,000 students, but they were chavrusas. Each student had a pal. Perhaps it is telling us the source of their destruction. What happened? Well, Rabbi Akiva was the master of the detail. Rabbi Akiva was able to look at the special little crowns. If any of you ever looked at a mezuzah or a tefillin or a Torah, some of the osios, some of the letters in the Torah have over them tagim, these little crowns. And Rabbi Akiva is the only human being in history, not even Moshe Rabbeinu, could darshan, could explain and bring laws about from the shapes of these crowns. Wow. And Rabbi Akiva's students, each of them were brilliant, yes, but they had a very big chisaron. They had a failing. What was their failing? That they didn't show respect one to another. Now, the Hebrew word for respect, you all know this word, right? The fifth commandment, kaved et avicha v'yatimecha. You shall honor thy father and thy mother. But what does the word kaved literally mean? So the word kaved comes from the word for heavy. There's a beautiful English word that a bunch of years ago became famous. We had a vice president that had this. So I remember hearing this word more than I've ever heard in my life. Do you remember the word gravitas? Gravitas is loosely translated as weightiness. To ascribe import. To describe import to something that someone else says or they're standing. To give someone gravitas, that somebody is weighty. That's literally the word kavod. To show kavod means to ascribe weightiness, import to the other person. And perhaps this was the issue at hand. For we know that Rabbi Akiva had a unique ability. Not only could he take something that was unintelligible to any other normal human being, the shapes of the crowns themselves, but he was a specialist in the detail. Can you only imagine that if he could look at shapes and take laws from that, how careful he was, every little nekuda, every little detail? And he transmitted this Torah to his students. But the students didn't have Rabbi Akiva's unique ability to not only look at the little details, but to then step back from the details and holistically put them all together in one uniform body. That they shouldn't just be little disparate entities on their own, but there was a holistic vision for Torah. No. Each of his students selected a specialty. And they became specialists in a little area of Jewish law. And they and their partner in learning, their chavrusa, remember there's 12,000 partners in learning, they each celebrated their own accomplishment among the two of them. But what happened to the other 11,999 pairs? Not so much. My Torah, they felt, or they said to themselves, my Torah is MS. It's real, it's truth, it's great. But the other 11,999, So it's not an issue they couldn't say good morning to each other, right? People read this and say, oh, they couldn't treat each other with proper respect. It's impossible to say that they couldn't say Bokir Tov or Chodesh Tov, how are you, right? Even under their breath, they may have wished other things, but it's impossible to conceive of that. So we believe the Gemara is then talking about a deeper type of respect, a respect for the learning, a respect for the individual. And because they were lacking in this, they created their own little universe, two students at a time. So there were 12,000 little miniature Torah universes, and they weren't ascribe any weightiness to the other 11,999. Their own's great, everyone else, not so much. This was the issue at hand. They were unable to reconnect the little details, the dots, as specialists. And I'll give you an analogy, which I think many of you can relate to. If any of you have ever been to like a doctor who's a specialist, okay? So sometimes you have specialists, and then you have what they call sub-specialists. Woo, okay? So you go to medical school for 100 years, and you become just a doctor, an MD. And then you want to be a specialist. So you got to spend another 2 or 3 or 4 years learning that specialty. And then if you're really, really, really good, right, they get you another couple years, and you learn like a subspecialty, and perhaps there's even a sub-sub-specialty, Ein L'Dav Arsof. And eventually, you are so specialized that you have like one little area. Remember my rabbi was telling me, he read a book about a guy, this is true, I'm not making this up, who was the world's greatest expert on the actual eyelids of a crocodile. The eyelids of the crocodile. if you asked him, well, what about the rest of the crocodile? No, I don't know anything about the rest of the crocodile. But if you want to tell me about the eyelids of the crocodile, I can write 25 books. So you talk about subspecialties. Now, the problem with a specialist, if any of you have ever been to a specialist, you know that there is something lacking. You know what that is? That they see the world through the prism of their specialty. So Rabbi Akiva's students, perhaps, saw the world through their little area of expertise, their little specialty or their subspecialty. And they weren't able to reconnect and reincorporate and connect all the other parts of the Torah into one vision, one holistic vision. They just kind of specialized themselves out of the Parsha, out of the learning. Now, if you think this is a small issue, it's not. And I know I shared the story once, but let me share it again because it's just shocking. So my Rabbi Weinberg was at a wedding, a Jewish wedding. Guy was felled at the wedding by some type of stroke, heart attack, stroke, some event, a calamitous event. And someone at the chasna, the wedding, boom, fell to the ground. The clarion call went out. Is there a doctor in the house? Okay, at a Jewish wedding with 500 people, you bet there were some doctors in the house. So they all kind of ran over to the guy. He's lying there like almost unconscious on the floor of the dance hall. And everyone kind of comes around, they make room for the doctors. And there was a young intern who was literally like a fellow, who was on a fellowship. And he was standing over the older gentleman who was suffering, who was in this bad way. And all of a sudden there was like Kriyas Yamsuf, splitting of the sea. And this world-renowned specialist, who was the world's greatest gallbladder expert, kind of elbows his way through to have a closer look at the old gentleman. And he takes a little look at him and he says, gallbladder attack. So the young guy, who is like literally fresh out of medical school, he doesn't want to contradict this world-renowned gallbladder guy, but he's just not convinced. So he says to the gallbladder expert, you know, he says, doctor, please don't hit me, but are you sure it's gallbladder? You know, have you ruled out heart attack? And the gallbladder guy looked at him with, you know, absolute disgust and disdain, and he said, look, I'm the gallbladder expert of the world. What do I have to say? Guess what happened? The man died. They did not do the proper medicine. They did not have the wherewithal to get the paramedics there and treat the man for the pashut, the simple approach, which is a heart attack. And the gallbladder expert specialized the guy right out of this world. Rabbi Akiva's students, who were specialists, specialized themselves out of the world. So it's a very sobering thing. So I don't want to end on a downer. But what I want to talk about is the triumph of Rabbi Akiva at the end. Because what happened? Remember what the verse said at the beginning of the Gemara of the Talmud from Yavamos? That at the beginning of a person's life, Zeroa es Arecha, you have to sow your seeds when you're young. When Rabbi Akiva was young, he developed 24,000. Now, I don't know about you, but if I had 24,000 students who are all great rabbis, I think I could retire safely to Florida and just relax at Boca by the beach, certain that my olam haba, that my contribution to this world was good and I get the next world. But no, Rabbi Akiva's entire world was blown up. In 33 days, he lost his world. But what happened? He didn't give up. Yes, he mourned. He was shell-shocked. But he gathered himself up, like the verse said. And he said these words. So they're autobiographical. And he gathered himself up. And it says, "Uba'erev al tinach yadecho." Don't rest in the twilight of your life. And he went down to the Darom, to the south of Israel, and he developed 5 shining stars. And these 5 shining stars are so big that the Talmud actually tells us in Masechet Sanhedrin that every time there's like an unaccredited Mishnah, which means the normative oral law in all of the Mishnah, it goes by one of his greatest students, the great Rabbi Meir, one of Rabbi Akiva's students. And we know that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, again, the author of the Zohar, a shining star, they are among the 5 who Rabbi Akiva developed in his old age. So he was validated retroactively that he never gave up, that he always had, Rabbi Akiva, this vision for what could be. And he lost in the most unimaginable way, Bar Kokhba, Beitar, 24,000 of his students, blown up. He did not give up. He did not allow the Romans to win the day. And I'll never forget this, and I'll share with this with you. When my parents visited Israel many, many moons ago, for about the 15th time, they went to Tiberias, Tiberias in the north of Israel, and they liked to visit some of the kever, some of the burial places of the righteous people that the Arizal, Rabbi Luria, found. And Rabbi Akiva's burial place, there wasn't much, unfortunately, to bury, but they smuggled whatever remained of him up to the mountainside, and they buried him sort of up above Tiberias. But it's kind of like a chalushas, to use a word for you. It's kind of like a very ornate, not really Rabbi Akiva-style grave. But you know what's profound about it? Is that when Rabbi Akiva was being tortured and murdered, the Romans pointed to the ships leaving the harbor, and they said, you know, Rabbi Akiva, you think you're such hot stuff. Those are your Jews going to exile, never to return. And the first Jews who came back as Olim Chadashim, as new immigrants to Israel, they were the ones who kept the promise to Rabbi Akiva. And they are the ones who funded and built that matzevah, that monument. Yeah, it's a little chalushas. But when you look at the small print and realize the purpose of it and who built that, it's so profound that Rabbi Akiva, his vision, his optimism, was never lost. Remember, he's the one who walked literally where the Heichal, where the Har Bais, the destroyed temple was. And when his colleagues were crying, what did Rabbi Akiva do? He laughed because he always saw the future, the joy. And we've all been through a lot of darkness. And there's still a little bit of darkness in our world today, I'm sorry to say. But let's all become Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Let us all double down and share the absolute optimism that even if the boker, even if the morning wasn't so bright, we still have the Erev, we have the rest of your life, you have the twilight, and it can be magnificent. Thank you, everyone.